Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. Documentary podcast, pulling your eyelids open, giving it to you straight talk, no chaser. We got a special guest this morning, Linda Wills. She's an executive promoter, an entrepreneur, and an author. Welcome, Linda. Welcome to our Newsmaker Line. This is Documentary Podcast, pulling your eyelids open. First off, Linda, tell us a little bit about yourself and who you are and how you got into the record business.
Well, good morning, Russell. First of all, I would like to thank you for allowing me to come on your show to do an interview. I'm Linda Wills. I'm from Washington, D.C. I've been a record promoter for over 25 years. A record promoter is a person who goes into the radio stations to get records played for different artists and for different record companies. Since that time, from being a record promoter for over 25 years, I am now an author. I have authored 3 books. The first book is called The Great Record Promoter, Behind the Scenes in the Record Industry, which is my memoir. It talks about my life growing up in Washington, D.C., and how I entered into the record industry and the different artists that I've had the opportunity to work with, legends such as Smokey Robinson, Al Green, Teddy Pendergrass, Dougie Fresh, Salt and Pepper, Tupac, and the list goes on. My second book is called Scooter Magruder, The Winner. It's a children's book. This book will inspire kids to use their natural gifts and talents as building blocks for their future. If they want to change the world, then they have the ability to do that with their gifts and talents. They can be the leader and not be followers. Also, my third book is called Secrets of the Heart, Bamboozled. It's a love story, and it talks about the journey that I had with the singer Al Green for many, many years. All of my books are available on Amazon. And, hey.
You have an extremely fulfilled life. Your life has been fulfilled. You have done some positive, awesome things in the record industry and also in the aspect of romance and love. How is it to be involved with a performer, a singer, someone who is famous? You see it now, the way that these things are today with social media and TMZ and all these things that have these cameras in your face. What was it like back in the day when you were dating Al Green? Is it hard to date a professional singer or a person who's popular?
Well, actually, Russell, I mean, I was young when I started dating Al Green. So basically, I was just going through the motions. I didn't know what to expect, but I was going to deal with whatever I was confronted with. From being his girlfriend, prior to me started working for Al, I mean, our love affairs grew. And so he wrote the song Love and Happiness. We were on the phone talking 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was telling him how much I loved him. And we were just, you know, going through the motions. And he says, oh, great, you know, why don't you come to Memphis? So, you know, I flew to Memphis that day. I had never flown before, but I knew how to make a reservation. So I made a reservation, flew to Memphis, Tennessee. I went to his house, met up with him there. From there, you know, we went to dinner. Then we went into the recording studio. And when he recorded the song and the lyrics, something's going on. Someone's on the phone 3 o'clock in the morning talking about how she can make it right. Love is when you really feel good about somebody. There's nothing wrong with being in love with someone. I was floored because that song was all about the conversation that we had just had 3 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, from there, he and I continued with our relationship, and eventually one of his secretaries was leaving the group, and he decided to ask me if I would work for him because he knew I had administrative skills because I was working with the federal government and I worked with Benjamin Hooks. He was the first commissioner, black commissioner, to work for the Federal Communications Commission. So I was detailed to work for him. So I had plenty of experience as being doing administrative work. And from there, you know, he hired me, and I went on the road. And it was pretty different from living a normal life because I was living in and out of a suitcase, traveling from city to city, state to state, dealing with all types of, you know, people, his record label executives and record promoters, and got a chance to meet the Prime Minister of Jamaica, went to the White House, did so many extraordinary things. And it was like the thrill of my life to be able to do something like that. So I learned a lot from that experience about the record industry and how to work with the artists. You know, the task was arduous because it was so much to do. And because I was dating him and working for him at the same time, you know, sometimes, you know, those types of things clash because if we had some type of personal issues, I did my best to keep it from flowing into the work that I had to do. I did my best to try to separate it. But I think it's a great journey that most people should get the opportunity to try. As far as today, where it is today, we didn't have as much violence. I didn't experience any violence when I was with Al Green when we went to shows. Nobody was shooting or killing people and fights breaking out and stuff like that. And so I think it's like the nature of the songs that are being sung nowadays has a lot to do with the culture now of the record industry. So what was nice then, it's a little different now. But, I mean, if I had to, I would do it all over again.
Excellent, excellent. Let me ask you a question. Do people promote records the same way today as they did back then? Do they go now into a record studio and hand a record to somebody? There's no records anymore. I mean, how do you promote a record today?
Well, a record is really, so it's just another word for a song. But there are still some promotion people that work for these major labels that go to the radio stations and talk to the program directors to get the music added. For the most part, a lot of the music nowadays, instead of a record promoter taking the music to the radio stations, a lot of the record labels now just send the song as an MP3 file to the radio station. They'll get a chance to listen to it, and then they can just, you know, use the email to follow up with the promotion person or the record company to let them know whether or not they're going to play the music. It's just that the internet is just a bigger platform now for people to not have to go into the radio station. They can just promote their music online, on the internet, on Facebook, on terrestrial radio stations and internet radio stations. So there's a difference. The terrestrial stations are the physical stations. The internet stations are the stations where the music plays, you know, via the internet. So that's basically, you know, the difference in how records were promoted then and now. But you still have people, you know, they go into the club to take the music, to have the DJ to listen to the music, because a lot of times a DJ can break a record for an artist before terrestrial radio or before the internet radio can break a record. So as I said, you know, the internet now is a bigger platform for artists to promote their song instead of taking it, you know, to a terrestrial radio station.
I want to ring a bell for you because you are truly a trooper. You're someone who was there in the beginning of promotions and advertising and networking and doing things that people had to do the hard way. You had to have, the DJ was a big part of a record promotion back in the day. There is no DJs today that I think on the radio that has that kind of power. The DJ back in the day had power on the radio. If he played a record like somebody like a Dick Clark or a Moon Man or someone from Philadelphia, Georgie Woods, those people were powerful people when it came to the record industry because they could move your records around. Today they don't have any DJs that's like that can really move a record. And most DJs don't have Plenty on Records today.
Well,
they did on Plenty on Music.
The program director or the music director, they're the people who are able to add your music to the playlist. Now, there are some DJs, if they have like a special show, say like a go-go show, something like that, maybe the DJ that's playing the music might have the autonomy to be able to add the record. And some of them still may have that, but only for specialized shows. Aside from that, DJs in the clubs can break your record. And they still have clubs, and they still have DJs that play music in the clubs. So that is still another way to be able to get your record promoted, get your record out there for the listeners to hear, even before it hits radio. And even if it doesn't hit radio, that's another platform that you can use.
Now, what made you transfer into Rebecca Promotion into being an author? What inspired you to write the children's book?
Well, after I stopped promoting records, I've always written. I've always been a person. I used to maintain a diary when I was growing up. I used to write things in diaries. I used to write poems. I used to write little short stories, but they never went anywhere. I only mentioned them or read them to a friend or something like that. And one day one of my girlfriends told me, she said, "Girl, you like a Nikki Giovanni." And that was really inspiring to me because she let me know that my writing had substance and that it was worthy for other people to listen to. So fast forward, after I stopped working as a record promoter, I decided to start taking the materials that I had, compiling it together, and I decided to write a book because I've always enjoyed writing. So now this is what I do as a hobby is write stories. So that's how I transitioned. It's something that I had always done in the past as a young girl, and then it came to full fruition in 2015 when I published my first book, The Great Record Promoter, Behind the Scenes in the Record Industry. And I will continue to write more stories. So I have 3 out now, and there are more books to come.
Excellent. I think your books are fantastic. I read The Great Promoter. I'm looking forward to reading the other 2 books. But you are an excellent writer, and what you have to say is so important. I also saw you on the documentary of Teddy Pendergrass. How did you get to be on that documentary, and what was your input to the story of Teddy Pendergrass? Why did they pick you to be in the documentary?
Okay, well, I met Teddy like in the late 1970s, and he offered me a job. The first night that I met him, he and I had a discussion, and I told him that I used to work for Al Green as his personal secretary, and I had the road experience. So Teddy told me, he says, "Well, I just left Harold Melman in the Blue Notes, and I'm going out on the road. I don't have a record deal yet, but I need a road secretary." And he asked me if I would accept a job. So I told him that I wasn't going to leave any more government jobs to work in the music industry, but I could work for him on the weekend. So I was traveling with Teddy on the weekend working because he said that was the only time that he was working, was doing shows then. And that's how I became a good friend of Teddy Pendergrass. And when I stopped working for him, our friendship just remained over a period of 30-some years. So when the producer, the executive producer for his documentary, she was told to get in contact with me by Teddy's manager because Teddy and I had a fruitful relationship. So she came in from London, England, and she went to Philly and interviewed Teddy's mother and Teddy's wife and other people in the group and Jimmy Carter, some of his band members who lived in Baltimore. She interviewed them, and then she came to D.C. to my home. And we sat down and we interviewed. And after we did the interview, she says, "Okay, great." She says, "We're going to have a production company to come to, to come to the United States, and we're going to set up in Philadelphia. And I would like for you to come to be interviewed for his documentary." And that's how I was able to get in to be a part of Teddy's documentary, which is called "If You Don't Know Me." And it is definitely about the life of Teddy. And so I was able to have a lot of input in that documentary because Teddy and I have been close friends for like 30 years. And the documentary is on Showtime. It's also on demand. And you can buy the documentary online from Amazon. It's a DVD.
Excellent. I'm from Philadelphia, and my mother bought a house right down the street from Teddy Pendergrass in Winfield, Philadelphia. And I'm familiar with the Leon Huff and Kenny Gamble and all that Philadelphia stuff because I grew up with that. And Philadelphia International Records and just the whole Philadelphia thing, you know, Uptown Theater and all that. But Teddy Pendergrass was an upcoming star. I mean, he was rising star. And it was just a tragic situation that accident stopped his whole train from moving. But he still kept going to where he lasted about another 20 years in the wheelchair. So,
yeah, he was 25 years after the accident. They didn't think he was going to live for 2 months. But
right,
Teddy went 25 years.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. And they talked about a promoter in the movie, in the documentary, where they talked about the movie who was his manager. And I think Sonny Hopkins was saying that she was just got, you know, something happened to her tragically. They never did find out what happened to that lady, you know what I'm saying? But she was one of his managers or promoters or whatever at the time. And they never did find out what happened.
Her name was Taz Lane, and she was Teddy's girlfriend and Teddy's manager. But
right.
One night when she went, she and some of the people that worked on her staff, she went home, and when she got out the car, when she got to the door, somebody came from behind a bush or something and shot her. And when her mom opened the door, she fell, and she died. And I think it's still a cold case. They never found out who took her life. And it was
right.
A tragedy.
They said it's something to do with his contract that she owned all the rest of his contracts, and she had a lot of power over him at the time, and they didn't want that. That was a rumor. The rumor was a rumor, it was never proven, but they were talking about she had some kind of power. But the record business is still kind of, you know, a fierce business, and it's still controlled by the record industry. A lot of people today didn't get the proper guidance when it comes to promotion, like what you were doing, or they didn't get the proper guidance when it comes to the contracts and the things that the record. A lot of people got took in the record industry. They took their money from them and they didn't get paid and all that stuff. And you know, they did shows and didn't get. It was a whole bunch of stuff to do with the record industry. You know, where now it's like a lot of people take control of their own. Do you think it's better to write your own songs, or do you think it's better somebody to write the songs for you?
Say that again.
Do you think it's better for someone to write songs for you, or is it better to write your own song, like a Dolly Parton or somebody like that who writes their own song? Which is better to do?
It's better to write your own songs, because if you write your own songs, you will get royalties from your music. So every time your song plays on the radio, jukebox, television, commercial, wherever it plays, once you get a certain amount of spend, you will get a royalties check quarterly. Or somebody else may want to use your music, and they will have to pay you, like Roy Ayers did, My Life, My Life, My Life in the Sunshine. Well, Mary J. Blige, she recorded that song. So he was paid handsomely because it was his song. So it's best to be self-contained and write your own music, and that way you will get royalties. If not, you will not get royalties for the song, because you don't own the song. You just sing the song. So I tell all artists, be self-contained, write your own music, and use a publishing company. I have two publishing companies. One is called Write You Publishing. I'm affiliated with BMI. So if somebody write a song, they come to me, I'll publish that song. From there, I'll publish it with BMI, and they will track the music. You have to use a performance rights organization to be able to track where the music is being played so you can collect your royalties.
Give your website, your email, your Facebook page, your phone number for all these artists and people who are out there today that have songs that they're writing that they can come to you. That's information that they may not know, that you have your own publishing company. Tell them how to get in touch with you.
They can get in touch with me through The Great Record Promoter at gmail.com. That's one of my email addresses. They can also contact with me on Facebook at The Great Record Promoter at facebook.com. Or they can email me at lindawillsl@aol.com, and I'll be more than glad to talk with anybody who calls me regarding publishing or need mentoring about the music industry. Everything comes with a fee, but still, you know, I will educate you and teach you the things that you need to know, and we'll publish your music. I also copyright music as well. So if you have a song that hasn't been copywritten, I can do that for you. Because if you do publish your song, you put your song out there without the song being copyrighted, anybody can come along and claim that song is theirs and copyright it and then own the song. So
that's excellent information. I know several people who are singing now. They need your services. So they should contact you to get this. Now, what about these people who sing at various places around town? Like, you have a lot of artists. I've been known over the last 15, 20 years. You have artists that sing and perform at these local places. However, they seem to be very good singers or performers, but why aren't they not writing songs or getting their own records? So why do they just keep singing other people's songs and performing at these local places like that? What's the logic in that? When shouldn't you be writing your own songs?
Well, some people don't have the talent to write their own songs, and some people just want to be an entertainer. So they sing cover songs. They sing other people's songs, and they get paid for their performance. But the pay that they get is limited because they don't have any original songs that they can receive royalties from through performance rights organizations.
Right. But I'm saying, if you're that good to sing somebody else's song, and the song sounds like the original song, you can make a song for yourself. Is that correct? I mean, like, somebody like a Fantasia.
But everybody doesn't have the talent. They don't know how to phrase the songs. They don't know how to write the songs. It's easy to duplicate what somebody else is doing. But when it comes to you doing it yourself, some people just don't have those skills.
Okay.
It takes skills to be able to write a song. It isn't something that you're going to just wake up one morning and do. Unless you have that talent.
Well, that's excellent information. That's excellent information. Now, what about the book? It's a children's book. What exactly is that about? Tell us about the children's book.
The children's book, actually, it's about a little girl who was born with a disability. She could not walk. But she had always vowed to herself that one day, once she's able to walk, she was going to do some things to change the world, because she would see other kids walking up and down the street, playing hopscotch or whatever, and she was confined to the wheelchair, and she couldn't. And she saw how beautiful life could be if she had all of her faculties and she was normal, just like a normal kid. So her parents said that they would search the ends of the earth to find a surgeon to be able to operate on her to make her whole. And once that was happened, one day her mother decided to buy her a little scooter to ride on, you know, to help to strengthen the muscles in her legs, because where her problem was with her legs. And she started riding that scooter, and then she just became fantastic. She was doing tricks on the scooter. She entered different contests, and she wound up being a hometown hero. And everything in the book, the backdrop, the tapestry, takes place in Washington, D.C., so I named Rock Creek Park, the mayor, and other locations in the city that people, you know, will be familiar with. So the story just goes to show you can be down today, but don't let that hold you down, because you can always rise to the occasion. So this is what I'm telling kids. Whatever your situation is, if you live in a bad environment or you don't like your parents or whatever the situation is, rise above it. Because there's something in you that God has given you favor in your life for you to be able to do things to help yourself and others in the future. So the book is just promoting excellence, letting kids know, don't worry about what's wrong, change it and make it better. So this book should be in public schools, all schools for kids, because it's inspiring. It has beautiful illustrations in it, and it teaches kids how to start their own community. Like Scooter, she started a scooter club. She was like 6 years old, but she, her mother let her have it and start the club. And she had friends of her own. They got together and they rode their scooters in Rock Creek Park and they entered into contests. So when she started her club, that's like starting a community. And so this is what I'm asking kids to do as well. Do your own thing. Bring people of like minds together with you, and you can change the world.
Excellent, excellent. What three people in your life mostly influenced your life or had a big impact on your life? What three people are they?
My mother had a big impact on my life because she told me, she said, Linda, whatever you do, she said, don't depend on anybody for anything, especially a man, not putting men under the bus. But she says, if anything that you want, you have to go out there and get it yourself. Work hard and get it yourself. And I have been independent for the most part all of my life. I've never married, but I'm like a self-motivator. I motivate myself to do things, and I don't need other people to influence what I do. But it's always good to have other people to give you some feedback from the things that you are doing. So my mother was my inspiration. My son, who is deceased, he's been deceased for like 20 years or so. He's also been a motivator for me, as well as my grandchildren. They are my motivators as well.
Excellent. So those are the three people in your life that has the most impact on your life, your son, your grandchildren, and your mother.
Yes.
Excellent. Now, how did you, let's ask this question, and this is a serious question for me because I'm just curious to know, a woman of your talent, and you are truly a very extremely attractive woman. You have class. You have all the makings of what they call, you ain't hurt nobody's eyes, put it that way. And you also are super intelligent. How did you dodge the marriage bullet? How did you not get married?
You know, well, for one thing, I grew up in a home. I had five brothers. I was the only girl. And so, like, I was always controlled by my brothers. Don't do this. Don't do that. Don't wear shorts. You know what I'm saying? Don't wear short skirts. My father was like, you can't date. It was just a lot, you know, growing up. And then when I got a chance to date Al Green, I mean, this man is a superstar. He was much different from the average man. So he really set the bar high for me, for men who will come forward who wanted to date me. And I haven't met anybody yet who I feel is my soulmate. I've dated, I've tried, I just have not met the right person yet.
Right. Excellent, excellent. Because relationships are hard, but it's even harder.
Very hard.
It's hard. It's hard. And today, and the older you get, the harder it gets. People don't realize that relationships are hard, but it's even harder if you don't have the information. And if you don't cultivate a relationship in your life, you can have people come in your life, they come through your life, but they will not be about your life. They won't be, like you say, your soulmate. They won't take the time to cultivate a relationship with you, or that they're so quick to leave you. They will start a relationship, say they want to be with you, even marry you, but they're quick to divorce you. They're quick to say, I can go find someone new. But Father Time is undefeated. As time goes on, relationships are even harder the longer time goes on. And you only
well,
get a couple.
Now that...
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Rob.
No, I said, I'm just telling you, it's harder the longer time goes on. But go ahead. Give me your feedback.
Well, it's hard because when people date, they have ulterior motives. They have some things in common, but a lot of times they have ulterior motives. If that motive is not satisfied by them, then they're going to move on. They're not going to tell you what their ulterior motive is. Like, say, like a man may date a woman because she has a lot of money or because she looks good. If those looks fade, his ulterior motive is to have a nice arm piece. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, he'll deal with her. But if her looks or something fade, he may decide he didn't want to deal with her anymore. Or maybe she's has a job now and she's making more money than he is. And now he has a complex because he wanted to be the breadwinner and the one to control the relationship. So most people go into these relationships with underlying motives. And once those motives that they have that you don't know anything about has not been solved, it's easy for them to move on. So people nowadays that get married, you know, they vow the vow to God, they're going to be together through sickness and in health. Those are just words that they're saying. They don't take those words to heart. And so it's easy for them to depart from somebody because they don't take those vows seriously. It's just a ceremonial situation that they have to go through. And so you have to be careful about who you date anyway. Like I said, people have ulterior motives. We don't know what it is until later on down the road. Then you feel like you've spent all this time with this person and you wasted your time. But that's just the way that it is. I'm just more cautious now than I've ever been. And sometimes, you know, all things aren't for everybody. Marriage may not be for me. Like some people can't have kids. Having kids may not be something for them. So, I mean, I've had enough relationships to figure out whether or not even I want to get married. But if that person is not my soulmate, I'm just going to keep it moving.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know about relationships. You've had relationships. You've been involved with people that of substance, people who were, like I say, famous. The bar was set high. But relationships are hard. It's just harder. I'll tell you right now, if you have someone in your life, cherish that person that's in your life. Treat them with respect and know that they want you. If they don't want you, you can read the tea leaves. You can see the things that they'll show you straight up that they don't want you. And if they don't want you, there's nothing you can do to make them want you, and you don't even should try to make somebody want you if they can still show you straight up that they don't want you. So, you know, the signs are there. The tea leaves are in your face. Just read them.
Exactly, because a lot of times the handwriting is on the wall, but people are in denial because they want something so bad, they're going to overlook what they should be actually looking at because they want something so bad, but everything that you want is not good for you.
Not good for you. Tell me the one thing that people misconstrue or misunderstand about Linda Wills.
It's my strength. It's because I speak from the hip. I don't BS around with other people. I don't patronize people. I call a spade. And some people think that I am too, some people don't want to hear the truth. They just want you to patronize them, and that's not the type of person that I am. But then there are a lot of other people that appreciate me being honest and straight up with them. Some people like it. And some people don't, but you can't please everybody. But I have to be true to myself and to other people.
Absolutely right. You have to be true to yourself. And people who are true to themselves, people respect more. No one likes a phony. No one likes a person who is not for real. And no one likes a person who is going to BS them. You don't want that. You want somebody to be straight. If you don't like me, tell me. Don't sugarcoat it, but pretend you do and find out later on you don't. I mean, you know, it's not that kind of party. You know, you want to know what you got to call it, what it's not. Life is hard, but it's even harder if you don't have the information. My thing is information is power. Let people know what the deal is. Like they say, what's the dealio? What is the real deal?
Right.
But
and don't go along just to get along, because that doesn't work at the end of the day.
No, it doesn't work at the end of the day. Because and then when you need somebody, or when people are supposed to be there for you and they find out that they're not there for you, they never was in the first place. And like if I meet a woman and she's been married 3 times and none of her husbands are dead, there's nothing she could tell me about the marital vow to God, because she lied to God 3 times. There's no way that she could possibly tell me I'm going to marry you, and let's take these vows, because the vows doesn't mean anything to her. She already showed you 3 times that she lied to God.
Right. Oh, she picked the wrong man for the wrong reason.
But 3 times? How you going to pick the wrong man 3 times? There's something in the milk.
Because you might like roughneck. You might like a roughneck. And so you get what you set up for. If that's what you like, you're going to get the same results every time. Sometimes you have to change the way you do things. You have to change what you like. Because if you like eating snails all day long, at the end of the day, you know they're not good for you, then why keep eating them? So a lot of people, they like a certain type of man, but that type of man is not right for them. So they like going around in a circle.
You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, people sometimes choose the wrong mate, or they keep choosing the wrong people.
Right.
What is your next book going to be about? You already wrote these 3 books. What other books will you think you might write in the future?
Okay, I have a trademark of these 2 little boys, and they're like beatboxing. That's my trademark. It's on the back of my children's book. So I decided to write a story about beating box, how they came into existence. So that book is going to come out eventually. And Dougie Fresh, actually, the rapper, really inspired it because he does the beatbox. So I created these 2 images for him to use on stage as a hologram. But that hasn't transpired yet, so I decided to do the story about beating box. There's another story that's called Behind the Veil about a little girl who had an accident again when she was growing up and how she was wearing a veil, but it's so ironic because now everybody started wearing masks. This kid was wearing a veil and everybody started wearing veils. So it seemed like I had a premonition of what was going to happen for the future. So those 2 books are already in the making. I have to finish them and publish those. And then I'm just going to write a book about life. Did you know? And Did You Know is going to encompass a lot of things. And once you read the book, you will understand why I wrote Did You Know?
Did You Know? Nice title for a book. Did You Know? There's so many.
Right.
Life is full of complications and turns and bends and different roads. You have to pick what road to go down. And life is association. Who you associate with will change your life. Who you marry, who you date, who you get involved with, business transactions, all that stuff will affect your life. But Did You Know is going to be a great book. I can feel the title of it. I can feel your inspiration about the book. It's going to be something that people will want to read and change lives, because information is truly power. When you have had the opportunity to meet some serious recording artists and work with some recording artists over the years, we can say Smokey Robinson, Dougie Fresh is still out there performing. I mean, he's got to be, you know, one of the legends that's still performing. Smokey Robinson is still performing. Some people can
perform.
Huh?
Salt and Pepper, they're also still performing. A lot of the artists that I work with are still performing.
Well, they had at Mary Bowser's inauguration, she had MC Light perform.
I was there.
Oh yeah, I was there too. Yeah, she had MC Light perform. So that was tremendous. You know, person from years ago who's still performing, and she looked great. She did a great job, and everything was really, really powerful. You know what I mean? So the record business is not, where do you see the record business going in the future? What is your insight for record companies and record businesses and people who perform in the future? Where do you see it going?
Well, people love music, so entertainment is always going to be around. It's just that record companies have just changed the way that they do things. At one time, they would sign an artist and give an artist advance money, say maybe like $100,000 in advance to do the recording, and then they would coop the music from the record sales. But nowadays, you have a lot of people are just independent. You know, they're doing their own things. They're starting their own record companies. But music is always going to be around because music soothes the savage soul, so that will never go away. We need music we need the lyrics from music. See, lyrics from music take life of their own. People are influenced by what they hear. And I would suggest to all people, whatever you write, just know that other people are going to adopt the things that you say, whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent, and then they're going to be held accountable for other people's lives. Even though they don't know that they have affected other people's lives, they will. So I would just suggest that people will use positive influences in their lyrics because they do influence other people's lives. But like I said, music is always going to be around. It's not going anywhere.
How do some artists become so powerful, like they can put a song out and within a matter of hours embrace the internet or embrace the barriers, like a Taylor Swift or Beyonce? What makes them artists become so powerful like that?
Because they have developed themselves over the year. It doesn't happen overnight. You know, it might take 10 years. You know, people may not hear about you, but you slowly continue to grind and grind and grind and put out good music. And after a while, you have established a following. You have fans. You have people that like your music. And you produce the kind of music that people like, you can wind up being a superstar. But it's a long road. It, like I said, it doesn't happen overnight. It's building. Like anything else, you have to build from the ground up. And eventually, if your lyrics are good and your music is good, you can become a winner. My saying is, if you stay in the circle long enough, it'll come around to you.
Excellent point. If you stay in the circle long enough, it'll come around to you. And that's what people need to – I think recording artists need to know, don't give up. If you can't write a song for yourself, find someone who's a good songwriter and let them write a song for you. And if you have the talent –
And then you get paid from entertaining. You'll make your money from doing shows.
Doing shows, right, right, right.
Yeah, that's how you will be able to make your money. It's from doing shows. And also, if you sing on a record, there's an organization that you can sign up with. You can get paid to sing on the song. At one time, if you sung somebody else's song, you didn't get any royalties from it at all. It was basically like work for hire. But now, like I said, there's an organization that you can sign up with, and you can get paid to be on that song, whether you wrote it or not.
There's several people that I know who are singers. I'm going to have them refer to you so they can talk to you or sit down with you or hire you to do some publishing for them and to make sure that they song, because they're very talented people, but they're local in the area performing a lot in the same area. What's your take on, do you have to go on the road to make it, or can you make it in a hometown without going on the road, or should you go on the road? You start
in your own hometown. You should start your base there. You know, get your fans together. You start at home, but then you can expand out. But I'm gonna tell you one thing about the music industry: it's age based. So if you're older, like 40 and older, and your songs are not like spot on, you may not be able to make it in this industry, because like I said, it's age-based, especially when it comes to being signed with these record labels. They like younger people, not older people, because a lot of the radio stations, they play music that the younger people have composed. Or if you are established artists like Beyonce or somebody like that, then you don't have any problems, you know, getting your records played on the radio or anywhere else, because you are an established artist and you're going to sell a certain amount of units. So if you're an old cat and you want to put a record out, it behooves you to just start your own record label, because the major record labels are not going to hire you. They just will not give you a deal. Like I said, it's age-based nowadays. And if
the older you are, the harder it is for you to get a record deal. If you're in your 50s or 60s, well, how come someone like a Charlie Wilson, who was an older guy, came out after he was with a band and all that? He was old. how did he get to be such a big to do?
Because he was already known. He was a part of the Gap Band. And he creates great music, and he has a great voice. So he didn't just come from out of nowhere. He came from out of a group.
Was somebody like a Lionel Richards? Was someone like a Lionel Richards who's in the 70s, but he's still relevant to writing songs and performing?
For the most part, Lionel writes for other people. I don't know the last time he put out his own song. And he's an established artist. So he has an audience, a built-in audience already, people that's around his age. But a lot of people around his age now, some of these radio stations, they just don't play music from older artists, you know, because
they put him on a show called American Idol, which is nothing but young people, and he's in his 70s.
And he's a judge. And he's a judge on the show.
He's a judge on the show, but he's an older guy judging young talent, where it seems like they would the record industry would say, no, he's not good to be a judge. He's too old. But he's not too old.
He has the talent. He knows talent. So he's able to give you guidance. That's why they use established artists, because they can tell you, you need to develop this or you need to develop that. Because they know how it is and how you should sing a song, what range you should use. It's just different things. So some things don't need to be fixed if it's not broken. So he's able to give guidance because he's a professional in the music business.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. I tell you, Linda, you have a wealth of information. You are a super talented woman. You are truly experienced when it comes to the record business. Very seldom do a person has the opportunity to meet someone like yourself who has been in the record business, the record promotion business. When I was a young man in Philadelphia, my uncle owned 7 record stores. And at 15 years old, he let me run a record store. And we used to sell records every single day. You know, you played the record and played on the outside, people walked inside, you played the record for someone, they bought the record, 45s and albums, that's how you sold records back in the day, with record shops. There is no more record shops. I mean, did you ever see the day that the record shop would be gone?
No, I didn't. No, I did not, but thank God, they still have a few mom and pop stores around, but nowadays, everything is, for the most part, is being sold online.
Right.
Because times change.
Go ahead.
I say because times change. So you
times
just change, have to change with the time.
I never thought there'd be a day where there'd be no record stores, no record shop, no where you couldn't walk in and buy a record. You know, you had to down. And like now, people don't even have a record, a radio in their house anymore. Everything is on an IP or download or iPod or on the internet, you know, anything you want to see. DJs don't even have records anymore. They don't come in, they come into the, you know, they don't have records anymore. People just use the laptop or the computer.
Because they all their music is programmed on the computer. So they'll take a record and they can, like, take the record and they can play the record and download it into an electronic file. And now they're playing from the playlist that they've already set up on their computer. Things change, and you have to change times. Nothing stays the same.
Right. But those were the days when you can go to a record store and play a record. Somebody said, I like that song. They buy it right there on the spot. You know, they could play the record, take the record home, and you could play the record right there in your house and all that now. Everything, you know, you can talk to Alexa, and everything now doesn't even you can get a song in a heartbeat. It doesn't take long to get a song.
It doesn't. And the record stores, artists, I used to take artists to the record stores. They did what you call in stores, so people came in the store. They got a chance to meet the artist, and they would buy the record that way. But like you say, now they have Alexa and all of these other different types of devices that you can use. I don't have Alexa on because Alexa to me, an old school word is tree boxing. Everything you do and say is recorded. It's like
right.
a surveillance device. I don't use
right.
Alexa.
Right.
Because everything that's going on in your home or anywhere else filed, that they collect the information on you. I don't suggest
right.
anybody use it. But people like convenience. Convenience is good, but that's not the underlying reason why that device is being created. It's going to give you some joy, but it's also going to give a tracking of everything you do, you say, your doctor's appointment, this, that, and the other. It's a surveillance device.
Right.
So.
But I tell you, it's a lifestyle. It's different today in the record business. And the record business is truly not the same, but you can't do without a record promoter. You can't do without a record company. You can do it without it, but it's easier if you have someone behind you, a machine behind you. I think that's what American Idol is about. If you won American Idol, the company can come and get behind you and produce their song for you, and you become a star because they've already
yeah,
seen
that's a platform for you.
The platform they can see already that they like you. People like the way you sing, and now all of a sudden you become a star. I mean, they produced a lot of recording artists out of American Idol. I mean, Fantasia is one of them. She's still doing extremely well. And she was just a person from High Point, North Carolina. She was just a regular little lady from High Point, North Carolina. And now she's a viable recording star.
But that's what every artist started off as just a regular person from a city,
right.
country, state, county.
Right.
And then their
right.
talent takes them to the next level.
Well, I tell you, Linda, you have really been a wealth of information. This has been a pleasure and an honor to have you on our Newsmaker line. Give us your closing statement.
My closing statement is for everybody to have a happy new year. Use the gifts and talents that God has given you so you can promote yourself and become as successful as you want to be in the world. Don't give up. Keep it moving. And eventually, what your heart's desire is, it'll be fulfilled, but it's not going to happen by happenstance. You have to put in something to be able to get something out of it. So happy new year to everybody, and thank you so much, Russell, for having me on your show.
Fantastic. Give us the way to contact you again before we close out.
The Great Record Promoter at gmail.com. or The Great Record Promoter at Facebook.com. Or you can do Linda Wills at Facebook.com as well.
Fantastic. This has been Documentary Podcast, Pulling Your Eyelids Open. I'm your host, Russell Price. See you tomorrow.
Have a great day.